Good morning, everybody. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. It's Elder Care Radio, only on News Radio 890-925-KDXU. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
This is Elder Care Radio, and welcome. We really appreciate these opportunities to share some of the things we've learned and some of the experiences we have working in hospice and palliative care. And so this week in hospice, we've had a number of people ask us, you know, about palliative, because we're having conversations with people who are not listening to this radio broadcast.
That is every week in hospice.
That's right. but we've talked about what palliative care is on this show, and so we're going to talk about something a little different today. And hopefully it's going to be useful information that people will hold on to, and when they find the opportunity to use it, they'll be able to take advantage of it.
Do you ever notice, Andy, that if you hear something or you make a plan, let's say, I know, you know, in this community, let's say that somebody gets called on a mission to South Africa, all of a sudden it seems like you hear a lot about South Africa, right?
Like when you buy a car, a certain model, and you've never noticed that car before, but all of a sudden when you buy one, there's a whole bunch of them all over.
Right. Well, this week has been, and actually I would say over the last several weeks, it's been interesting. We've had so many questions relating to cancer, cures, treatments, when it's appropriate to stop chemotherapy, and just kind of our opinions. And it is, you know, just an opinion, because why do we call medical practice a practice? Because everybody's very, very different, and our bodies respond very differently to different therapies, and we can last different periods of time on, you know, individual therapies. But it was interesting this week last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of questions about what science studies show or reveal regarding cancer therapies, and one in particular we found quite interesting.
Yeah, so there are some things we should probably consider, you know, when it comes to cancer. Not all cancers are going to be cured, but we get to decide, if we're informed, how we want to proceed. If that's not going to be a cure, there's a possibility that a cancer treatment might prolong life. Mm-hmm. It might not. It also has an effect on our ability to thrive, and so it could shorten our lives. There are those possibilities.
Can I go out on a limb here?
Yeah.
And Richard will probably close me down quickly, but I think that by nature, a physician really, they go to school to cure, right?
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think that they give you the total picture when they're saying, well, this cancer treatment, perhaps chemotherapy regimen, isn't really working very well anymore, so we should try another chemotherapy regimen. And really the question that we should probably ask of ourselves before we proceed with that next regimen, because I personally have experienced with a family member where the oncologist said, if you don't do this therapy, you will die, and very direct and specific. But the question was, if I do the therapy, are you still expecting me to die? And then the question is, so is the chemotherapy going to take days away from me that are quality days, or is it going to add days of life, quality days, right? Because those are important questions, even though they're scary to ask. But wouldn't you rather spend, if you knew, wouldn't you rather be spending days feeling well and enjoying your family versus being in bed and very, very ill and not wanting family to come visit? So those are important questions, but the reason I brought that up is you have to ask the questions, because sometimes they aren't just readily available or offered freely.
So if you haven't been listening to the broadcast recently or ever in the past, and this is your first one, you may think this is really some harsh conversation to be had, but that's we do that here on this on this broadcast. I mean, we just talk about the realities.
Helping. Yeah. With the intent of helping.
Right, because death is a part of life, and I know it's one that we all try and avoid, but instead of shutting it down and avoiding it entirely, being better informed so that you can manage it, is always going to be a better option. So we always recommend that people be their own best medical advocate.
Absolutely.
Be actively engaged in your care. And that's what we're really going to be talking about.
And if you're trying to make a decision when you're in crisis mode and when the emotions are at the very heightened sense, then it's very difficult to rationalize and reason. So if you make decisions up front and you've thought them out, whether it's relevant to you or maybe in beginning stages of a disease, it makes the process and the decision-making not only easier on you, but easier on your family. It's really difficult for your family to step in and give real valuable opinions when you're in crisis mode, because you just want to fix the problem. You yeah. just want it to go away and start over. You want to go back 3 months or prior to your diagnosis and pretend like it never happened.
So when it comes to cancer, there are many different types of cancer, many different outcomes that can happen. So we're not going to try and blanket this with a universal statement. We are going to add some information to the conversation so that you can find a better, more appropriate solution for yourself. But there are some things to consider. Now, when it comes to cancer, you know, whether it's fast growing or slow growing, there's surgery that can be done that may help. There's some of the more common things like chemotherapy and radiation. Those are some things. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about, is these processes that are available, and specifically, this is the more important part, how you can be actively engaged and participate and look for better outcomes. And that's what our goal here is to give you the tools so that whatever the situation is, you can do more to have a better outcome.
And possibly improve efficacy.
Right. So there have been a number of studies, and they've all been, they've all kind of come to the same conclusion. And yet what may not be the case is the doctors talk about these things, because this is stuff that's not within the scope of their practice. It's within the scope of what patients can do. And truthfully, I don't think there's a single doctor who isn't tired of saying, well, diet and exercise would help in your condition.
Right.
That's a really mundane thing.
Weight is a negative contributor to every chronic illness.
Right. But, you know, activity is good. You know, eating healthy is good. So we're not going to be cutting any new ground here, but we do want to give you good information to help you with that. So there have been a number of studies about fasting during cancer treatments, and those studies have all said that the outcomes are significantly better. Now, there's a lot of details in this, and so I want to make sure that we set some limits on this for people, and that is that there would be reasons not to consider fasting, specifically if you have
severe protein malnutrition.
Right. If you've had more than 10% weight loss recently and your body mass index is less than a 20.5, or you have diabetes, those are all, and I think we all understand, those would not be benefited by more fasting, right? If you have diabetes, you can't have that huge swing of caloric intake. And so those aren't necessarily options. But for people who have the ability, fasting can have a great impact. And so the studies look at a 72-hour fast, okay, right around your chemotherapy treatment, 48 hours before and 24 hours after, and how that can affect it. And so if we understand what cancer cells are, they are cells that are active or overly active, right? They're reproducing faster. They are burning calories much faster than the rest of your body. And chemotherapy is intended to stress all of the, you know, cells in your body, but the ones that are going to be stressed the most, in theory, are the chemotherapy, cancer cells. So if we can add another layer of stress, and that would be starvation to these cells, then that leads to the conclusion, which has been shown by these studies, that cancer cells will die even faster.
If we were going to put it really, really simply in more of a layman's terms, if you've got your chemotherapy cells in their immune compromised position, then when chemotherapy or radiation treatment is imposed, they're more likely to die off more rapidly. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes it a little bit easier to make sense of the reasoning behind the studies. And it's interesting that it, across the board, it says that the studies have proven that it increases, fasting during cancer treatment increases the efficacy of chemotherapy. That's just interesting to me.
Right. So this has been done in animal trials and across the board almost every time it helps. But does that translate into human trials? And there are a few small groups that's been tried on and it's worked. You don't have to wait for your doctor to suggest this. I would encourage you to talk to your doctor about it. But again, this may be something that's outside of what they were looking at for, you know, within the scope of their practice and trying to solve this. So they're looking at the different types of chemotherapy. And there are probably a dozen different chemotherapy drugs. So they may be trying to figure out which one of those would be best for you. Start out with one until that doesn't work, and then we'll try another one. If that doesn't work, then we'll try another one. And that may be where they spend all of their time. And they may not have looked at, okay, so what things outside of medicine might also be a benefit here? So you should bring this information to the conversation. I can't imagine your doctor's going to say, oh, no, let's not bother with that because I just want to, you know, to do this on my own. I want to try to see if I can cure your cancer without your help.
Somebody had texted a question, by the way. Yes. We're talking about fasting during, before and after chemo. What about water intake during that same time?
Okay, so if we're looking at 72 hours, and it's a great question. We would have covered this a little later. Certainly, we don't want to dehydrate ourselves. So water intake is great. Non-calorie drinks is great. So the fasting is about calorie intake, not about a religious...
Water.
Yeah,
right.
And trying to just show that we are durable people. Okay? Yeah.
In fact, water really, I don't know if people realize how many diseases are adversely affected by dehydration.
Yeah, true.
To go out on a limb, you know, we have seen study after study after study that says that quite often from viruses like flu viruses, it's actually the dehydration that contributes to death.
Wow.
Not, you know, the flu. We probably could have overcome the flu if we wouldn't have taxed our body so much with the dehydration. So stay hydrated.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in this case, drink more water than you probably should or you probably think you have in the past. There's little bad in drinking water as long as you don't try and do a gallon in 5 minutes. So right. Let me just say, you know, people have said you should drink a gallon of water, which is a lot, but certainly don't try and do that in 5 minutes.
And my buddy Dr. Blodgett says if you drink when you're thirsty, it's already too you're already waited too long.
You should have already been drinking.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have chapped lips, you're dehydrated. And if, you know,
dry skin,
aches and pains, yeah. You know, all of those things. Those are all indicators. So I think everybody could probably drink more water.
Right.
But in these studies, they weren't talking about not drinking. They were talking about just caloric intake. Now, there's a couple of different studies, and this is where, you know, it gets a little more complex, and you should be well-informed, and we hope we can do that for you. There are also studies that show that calorie reduction has a positive impact. Just overall calorie reduction, where we are eating significantly less than we would. Because, again, our bodies are still being stressed. And the cells that are going to experience that stress the most are the ones that are the cancer-causing ones.
And, again, simply put, if cancer cells are more active than your normal cells and they're out there looking for sugars to feast on, then reducing the caloric intake stresses them too.
Right. And so that's an option. However, there's two outcomes there. Fasting, 72-hour fasting, does not seem to have as big of an impact on overall weight loss. And one of the things with cancer is, you know, weight loss is one of those problems. It's not a great thing. So the 72-hour fast may be better, and this is, again, something to talk to your doctor about. The 72-hour fasting right during that treatment may be better than long-term caloric reduction. But either of those does have a positive impact, and you should compare and contrast under your circumstances, your, you know, where you're at in your cancer, what cancer you have, what treatment you're taking. Those are all going to be indicators. So we just want people to understand that fasting can be a great benefit, but we don't want to make these too broad statements of it'll cure cancer or it'll keep you from ever having cancer. There may be studies that show that it can contribute to that, but in science, we always know that there are exceptions to every statement. So we never want to make too broad of a statement with that.
I didn't say, and we really should have stressed, thank you so much for texting in that question. That was a great question, and we really should be spending some focus attention on the, you know, dehydration as a negative contributor to chemotherapy and cancer therapy. So thank you for your question. Thank you for reminding us to address that.
A little more fine detail in that, they found that fasting also reduces the toxicity of the chemotherapy drugs to the rest of the body. And so you actually may have a better outcome after that that chemotherapy treatment, because if you know somebody who's gone through that, or if you've gone through it, you know that chemotherapy can really ravage your body, and that's its intent. It's what it does, and you're trying to overcome it. So if we can reduce the toxicity to the rest of your body by doing that fasting, then that makes good sense too.
Somebody's vibrating.
What's that? Yeah. Sorry, we got a call.
That's not a bad thing. By the way, Jan, who asked the question about the water, said also you were talking about toxicity. She said a little fresh lemon in your water will help reduce toxicity as well.
Okay. I don't have a study on that.
No.
But I'm not saying that that's bad. And certainly I always like some lemon in my water. So there is, we are not the fountain of all information.
I thought you were, Richard.
No. You know, this is a great opportunity for us. We get these questions, and we get to find out answers, and, you know, using reasonable resources, so we're better off. And that's kind of what I enjoy about it, is solving problems and doing the research. So it's great, but there is a lot of research out there and a lot of details. And so I'm going to recommend that everybody do their own research. Don't take our word for it. If you want the factual foundational stuff, give us a call. We'll give you that information so that you can work from that. Most of everything we talk about on the show comes from reliable sources like the NIH, the National Institute of Health. They are the, the library of medical information for the U.S. government. The World Health Organization also does that. There are a number of publications that are used. However, some of those publications are less reliable than others. You know, there's been an expose on the economy of journalistic value, I guess, where you can you can buy your way into any journal and get a study published. So you have to take all that with a grain of salt. I mean, big pharma and the medical industry have kind of usurped all of the ways we would normally find information and have kind of adjusted that for their own benefit. You know, they will squash information that isn't pharmaceutical. So we are big proponents of not saying no to pharmaceuticals, but saying yes to pharmaceuticals. But what else? What other options are there too?
Yeah.
So that we can be better informed. You know, if it's diet, there's no question that a Mediterranean diet is a generally healthier diet. Low carbohydrates, good fats.
A lot of fish.
Lots of vegetables. You know, that's a good diet. That's not medical. So you'll never hear much about that, you know, from you won't see that kind of stuff on a broadcast commercial. You know, that Pfizer has a new solution for you, and that is eat your fruits and vegetables.
No.
That's just not going to happen, because their solutions are much more beneficial for them.
Monetarily based.
Yeah, monetarily based. So we try and bring you kind of that balance and give you a little bit more information all the way around.
And we really appreciate the last couple of weeks, the questions and the trust that people have placed in us by giving us those calls and saying, you know, we had some questions about this, and we don't always have the answers, but we want you to know that we will do the research and look for, you know, the medical and the natural forms to address to answer your questions. We love those questions. As a matter of fact, I don't think we gave our telephone number.
No, we have not yet.
To call in.
So that telephone number is extremely complex. It's the local area code, 435. And then on the left-hand side of the keypad, it's 477. And then you slide over there to the far right, and it's 6999. So always remember
Thank
that.
Thank you for that visual.
And as I said before, it's easier than dialing 911 because you don't have to reach all the way up to the top of the keypad.
Okay.
And so if there's ever a medical concern or a question or anything else, give us a call. Or if you're looking for resources, you know, if you're looking for something to do and need some suggestions, then we'd love to take that call and help you find a good solution for what's ailing you.
Right. I'm going to let you go on.
Oh, you are. All right. So let's keep going on this so that you're better informed. Studies, and then we're going to talk about calorie reduction and specifically calorie reduction without malnutrition. Okay?
Right.
So that's this reasonable center. I think we could all, not all, most of us could probably afford to eat a little less, and that's probably beneficial. For those that can't afford to eat a little less, eating a little less is not good. Let's start there. So calorie reduction without malnutrition is the most potent and reproducible physiological intervention for increasing lifespan and protecting against cancer in mammals. And that's the results of countless animal studies where we don't have people's opinion affecting their health. We have plenty of ways to do that. And we're talking about hundreds of years of research on these calories. And we can talk about the value of calories, what kind of calories are better. And Kaylee mentioned the word sugar.
Right. There's a lot of studies in here that talk about the restriction of sugar. And we know that some things convert in our body to sugars, carbohydrates.
Yeah, starches and things like that.
Right. So we should, if we're not going to fast or we're unable to fast, at least limit the sugar intake.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of studies that have proven that cancer cells specifically feed and regenerate off of a lot of sugar intake, carbohydrate intake.
Right, because that's bioavailable energy, right? It goes directly into your bloodstream and is circling around, and they can just scavenge that off so quickly. If, on the other hand, we're taking in foods that take our bodies longer to process and break down so that those calories are slowly integrated into our body, and the rest of our body has a chance to absorb some of that, and again, your cancer cells are wanting more than is available, then we're still having a positive impact on those cancer cells. We're making it a stressful environment for them, and stress can certainly cause them to pass away.
So even if you are compromised on your weight and you can't really afford to fast,
mm-hmm.
you can afford to avoid the sugar intake.
Right, sugar and
really
starches.
Stress on that. Right.
Try and avoid sugar and starches, and of course that's good advice for everybody, whether you have cancer or not. So we need to look at that as a way to go. So, and it's interesting to see so many different religious foundations that have had good health, beneficial plans, laid out for them, even though they may not have understood why.
Right. You have to ask yourself, did the higher power know something?
Right. whether that's Buddhism or right. Islam or Hinduism or Christianity.
Yeah. They all have fasting.
Judaism. Yeah, they all have healthful intent, and they've come up with some things that I think are pretty amazing for the knowledge that might have been there at the time. So we can butt our heads against that all we want, or we can just accept that, yeah, maybe there's some value in old wisdom and not feel like we always think there has to be something new to be good, because new is not always better. We have 1 minute, and so we're gonna cover this pretty quickly. There are just so many things in this that we'd like to share. The 40 to 80% of the tumors that were found in rats were affected by that fasting. 40 to 80% had a positive outcome.
Let me also say that it wasn't just a rat study. They did actually do, and there's a study on NIH, which is the National Institute of Health, that had a very, very large human study that also had the same positive effect by very high percentages.
Right. And so fasting also, over calorie reduction, again, these are the separations, does a better job of cellular protection for the rest of your body. And that's why that fasting instead of calorie reduction may be a good option. Because when we're fasting, our body immediately goes into this conserve mode and protect mode, and we have to survive this bad situation. Whereas if we just go with calorie reduction, our body kind of gets, okay, well, we're used to this. This is the new norm. And so fasting has a much more powerful impact on this. So things to consider. And so we're getting the signal we have to cut this short. So give our office a call. Look at our website. Let us know if there's any questions you have. We would love to hear from you. 435-477-6999.
Have a great week, everyone. We look forward to...